Fans, welcome back to Hot Takes and Heaters. This is your MLB-centric podcast, partnering with Future Sox. He's Danny Miller. I am Nick Marowski. Our Chicago White Sox 4-8 in Cactus League play. A lot's gone on since the last time we've talked. Some starters are actually starting games. We've got Oscar Colas playing in a different position. Pedro Grifol continues to talking about lineup construction and a few surprises, as well as, you know, who's coming off the bench. Who's going to be those utility? Miller, good to talk White Sox baseball with you, sir.
You know, it's a pleasure to be here as usual with you, Mr. Nick. Before we get the show rolling, I just wanted to ask if we could have a moment of silence for Mr. Lucas Giolito's elbow. Oh, tough times for him, huh, man?
It's too bad. You know, I heard all the conversations, and I kind of might have been in some of the camps of, hey, why don't we take a flyer on Giolito, try to maybe bring him back this offseason. I completely understood what happened at the trade deadline. I was having conversations with people fairly regularly, actually, that would get at me on Locked On and say, you know, why would you want to move Giolito? You know, it looks like you might have found something here. And it's not that I wanted to move off of Giolito. It's just that's the way the White Sox operate. They do not retain starting pitching. We're in a situation where we had to be sellers, and, you know, there are teams that obviously could have used his services. Now, he did not do well for himself after the trade deadline. But I was happy that, you know, he found a team. You know, he's going to start fresh. It's a shame it didn't work out with the White Sox, but yeah, you know, it's really unfortunate. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. And, you know, we were talking before we got going here with Ian, and, you know, Ian made a great point of, you know, it's how he returns. I mean, that's questionable right now in terms of just playing baseball again.
Yeah. You know, you got to kind of wonder about a guy who's it's been his second surgery on that UCL now. And, you know, like you, I was kind of on the bandwagon a little bit of who are we going to get to fill this starting rotation this season? Right. You know, the White Sox had some holes, a lot of question marks, you know, and still question marks to this day. And there's been a handful of pitchers go down in, you know, since the start of camp and in spring training. And, you know, as Ian and I used to talk on a regular during our White Sox daily podcast, you know, we always talked about there's never too much depth in, you know, at least serviceable pitching. Right. And, you know, you thought maybe Lucas Giolito, he kind of blew up his season at the end of the year last year. You thought, well, maybe it's because he got away from Ethan Katz, and maybe you bring him back and the old Katz will fix something happened. But, you know, looking back at what happened to him, and he bounced around a little bit the second half of the season last year, he found a couple of new homes, and you kind of wonder, was that UCL maybe an issue towards the end of last year where he was going to be needing Tommy John and didn't really know it, and you know, just kind of found its way into a full-on tear at this point in spring? I don't really know, but yeah, it's a tough times for him.
Yeah, I like reading those articles, is, you know, having a bit of a pitching background as you do as well. I've enjoyed reading about pitchers trying to recreate or reimagine or imagine for the first time, you know, a new pitch. And it feels like every couple years there's a trendy new pitch out there where pitchers are trying to work on, you know, on their side sessions. Sometimes it doesn't become in vogue during spring training, so you kind of have to do it during the season. Giolito's been a guy that, you know, I think is challenging himself, like wants to get better, is very cerebral. And I mean, he's taken all that in consideration, I think, probably with mechanics. he has fluctuated body type though over the last several years. You know, he went from very flexible to then he bulked up and was just a lot of upper body mass, and he pulled an oblique early in the season, and then he got back to flexibility, and so I don't know if that plays a role in the arm and the strain. I don't know if he was trying a new pitch, trying to work on something, different grip, different whatever, and it's just his arm couldn't handle it. I mean, it's got to be more than that. At the end of the day, sometimes, Danny, it's just like your body just doesn't let you do what you want it to do. You know, we've seen that with so many athletes across the board in terms of sports. Like, you just can't do it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of folks will say, well, thank God that they did trade him when they did, right? And at least we got something back for him now that he's likely to miss the 2024 season. You know, the reports are out there. Nothing's been solidified yet, but we all know what's coming at this point. You know, I really enjoyed his time here on the South Side. I don't have any ill will or bad feelings towards the guy. I hope he heals and I hope he does get back to pitching. But, you know, here we are. It's a tough break. So,
you know, when I think about what Giolito meant to the White Sox, and you obviously have to factor him in the beginning of the rebuild. You know, I think it was a day after the Chris Sale trade where he comes over from Washington for Adam Eaton, and everything's in motion, and the hype over this guy Giolito, and you know, he just hit or miss. You know, it just, he has that magical no hitter during the 2020, and then the vision of just him against the A's starting that series, and the look, right, the sway, the just the overall body language that he had when he was zoned in and dialed in. I mean, man, that was fun. That was some fun Giolito stuff.
Yeah. You kind of hope that we're going to get the same kind of energy out of at least one of these guys on this team this season. You know, like I said a few minutes ago, there's a lot of question marks surrounding our starting rotation now, but you know what? I don't know if I'm doing this out of order. If you had some sort of itinerary,
I like that, where you're going though. This is a great segue.
This leads us into one of our topics.
It really does.
Dylan Cease has had some thoughts on.
Dylan Cease has had some thoughts.
The rotation.
Yeah, he's gone a couple innings, a couple hits, a strikeout, no runs. I mean, again, small sample size, but we're starting to see our starters get some innings here, which is a good thing, especially since the last time we talked. It's more been about what he has said and how he has felt. And, you know, obviously he continues to get peppered and will about the trade rumors and how are you compartmentalizing that with what's going on. And, you know, he's saying all the right things. He doesn't even think about it. You know, it's all systems go in a White Sox uniform. But I found this a quote to be pretty interesting. I don't know if you saw that. I'm really excited for this rotation, Cease said. A lot of people are sleeping on us. You see how the ball is coming out of Michael's hand right now. Garrett is nasty. Fetty is super nasty. He locates well. This team has a ton of potential. We're being slept on for sure. So there's a couple things going on in that quote. It's obviously the team, which everybody is sleeping on, the Chicago White Sox, and there'll be more projections that'll continue to come out leading up, of course, to opening day. And I haven't seen anything yet. Maybe you have, Danny, that has gotten the Sox out of the cellar of the AL Central. Everything has us right down at the bottom, you know, 64, 65 wins, depending on what site you look at, where your projections are coming from. So he's talking about, you know, everybody sleeping on this club. And maybe he's also talking about sleeping on the pitchers. But, you know, he went on and he started talking about some of these guys. But, you know, there was no mention of like a fifth. I'm still trying to figure out that. And maybe we can chop it up in a little bit. But what were your reactions to, you know, Cease's comments there?
You know, my initial reaction was, of course, everybody's sleeping on this team because you were a 61 win team last season. And, you know, some folks will say it was addition by subtraction, But you've lost some of your key players that were part of that rebuild that we've been talking about. And you've only filled in spots with guys who had statistically their worst seasons over the last year or two. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're going to do the quick, you know, just quick glance over this team on paper, of course people are sleeping on this White Sox. Do you expect them to get better? You and I might. I know folks like myself and Ian and you know, a lot of the folks here at Future Sox think that there's a good possibility that they do have a handful more wins than they did last year. But to say that, you know, maybe folks are sleeping on them a little bit, I don't know that we live in that section of the multiverse, in that one thread of the multiverse where maybe this team gets all those what ifs that we've talked about in past episodes together. Because honestly, there's a stack of what ifs. You know, what if everybody stays healthy? What if Aloy has that 40 plus home run season? What if Luis Robert takes another step after a really great year last year? What if Andrew Vaughn becomes the guy that they drafted in the first round to be, you know, the best professional hitter out of his draft class? What if Yoan Moncada finally becomes the super stud that everybody's expected him to be? And what if Andrew Benintendi all of a sudden finds the power that they were hoping to get out of him? I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there. What if this kind of piecemeal pitching staff that we've got going on here that sure has a lot of potential, what if those guys finally do it, what they're supposed to do? You know, the Flexens and the Ceases and the Kopex and, you know, all these guys that, right, like in the chat, we see Clutch Hattricks saying, what if I date a supermodel? I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there. And sure, if we lived in that thread of the multiverse where all those what ifs come together and everything finds a way, sure, I could see this team being 500 or maybe even better. I don't know, but it's a lot of what ifs. And
yeah, we play this game. We have for the last several off seasons, and we're not the only team playing this game. You know, they're every team within the AL Central, the AL, all across MLB is saying, what if XYZ stays healthy? What if we have a better run diff? What if our bullpen is a little bit more serious? Like, again, the teams didn't take their foot off the gas around the league and say, let's see if the Sox can get all their ifs in order. Then maybe we'll start trying. No one's waiting for us, you know? So like you had said, it's a stack of ifs. And so when you've got that, I, as a fan, think about, well, what are more of my guarantees? You know, obviously there's no guarantees, but which are the ones that you just feel like, you know what you're going to get. And I feel like Cease is the only one in the starting rotation where I think I'm comfortable enough where I'm going to get a full body of work. At least I'm gonna get 30 starts if he remains in a White Sox uniform, which obviously that's a huge question mark. Some might say it's a huge question mark if he even starts the season in a White Sox uniform. But let's assume, you know, taking this quote, since he's the one that offered it up, I kind of know now what I'm gonna get from Cease. You know, I here we go. Danny's got the heater ready to go. Again, still trying to figure out what makes Danny tick. But I think just in general, when we get frustrated about any department within the White Sox, of course, the heater gets fired up. So, you know, Cease went on and said, this is the best I've been in spring training in I don't know how long. And that's wonderful. That's great. You're feeling good. You're not the only one within the White Sox nor around all of baseball. He's in the small sample size. He looks pretty comfortable, but you know, we've got a long way to go here in spring. And then obviously, you know, April, May hasn't really been kind to the White Sox over the last few years. And we can get into that a little bit too. but you know, I don't know, like, hey, Kopech, he had his shaky first, which is his the name of the game for Michael Kopech, which is again why I question. I can't think of him out of the bullpen.
Put him in the bullpen.
I can't.
He's
think
a
of
closer.
I get it. He tends to have a short life, right? And he's got some electric stuff, but you don't have a buffer. You don't have a cushion because he said after his start this past week, you know, of course there were some anxieties and everything. It was his first start of the spring and, you know, butterflies and what have you. So the ball was jumping, the plate was jumping, but that's kind of been the case with Kopech in that first inning. And then he settled down and he got some things over and he had some nasty stuff at times. You don't have that luxury coming out of the bullpen unless you're always going to get a clean inning. Nobody right. on, and, you know, here's a great situation for you. That's not the case. You can't have somebody like that.
Even as a closer, you're coming in with a clean inning in most cases, right? Unless you're going, you know, the 4 or 5 out save. But in most cases, you're coming in with a clean inning in the ninth. And if it takes you an inning to settle in, that's not indicative of what a closer should be. No. Maybe if he does go to the bullpen, maybe I see him in a long relief role where you're comfortable bringing him in and say the fifth, yes. sixth, seventh inning.
You would take over like a Jesse Schultens, you know, who I thought was probably right. going to be maybe a long relief. Yeah. That's how you'd have to do it. Yeah.
You know, that's the thing though, with Michael, he's obviously a guy who can give you multiple innings, right? He's been groomed as a starter. He's been stretched out. If we're going to put him in the bullpen, make him a middle reliever, long reliever, make him a starter if you want. But again, if he's going to come out shaky, you know, he's going to have to be, you know, you're not going to make him an opener. You're not going to do the first inning, you know, 1, 2, 3, get out of the inning and then bring somebody
first
else.
First inning
in.
Is his worst inning, you know.
Right,
you
exactly.
That would be a cruel and unusual punishment for the guy, unless he can figure it out in spring. But if you take him out of the rotation, then who are you putting in the rotation that the rest of the league is sleeping on? You know, going back to Cease's comment, like, I think everybody's doing the appropriate amount of sleeping and attention based on all the projections and what we see with this team. Like, am I missing something here? It's not like we've got, you know, beyond Cease, a proven 2-3. You know, you got a three-headed monster at the top, and then maybe 4 or 5 are still – they still need to prove something, but they feel like they're pretty reliable. We've got a few guys in this rotation. And then a big, I think, question mark in 5. Pedro Grifol even said this past week, like, nothing is settled yet in the rotation. So I think Kopech stays, you know, in the rotation as of right now. So you've got Cease, Kopech. Now, Garrett Crochet, okay, we talked about his Dodgers outing last episode. We were able to talk about the Shohei Ohtani stuff and how good he looked and what kind of confidence builder that was going to be. Well, he got into some action this past weekend against the Angels, came in relief. It's just a short, you know, short outing. I think altogether he's got less than 4 innings, but looked really good again, Danny. Struck out Mike Trout. So what a spring he's having. He struck out Ohtani. He struck out Trout. You know, the ball's jumping out of his hand. We talked about this several weeks ago. Can he really be a starter? Are they really going to put Garrett Crochet in the starting rotation after giving him nothing, you know, in the minors as a tune-up? And I thought, if they're having that open conversation in the media, if they're floating that, they've already vetted this situation and they've already figured out that he's done the prep work. It's just a matter to how he looks like, you know, in the spring. So far so good in my mind.
No, yeah, and here's the thing, you know, everybody's been trying to prognosticate that if he does come out and enter the rotation, how many innings he's going to give you. You know, some folks are saying 75 80. Some others are saying 100, 125. No, nobody really knows. We can try to prognosticate all we want. But the reality is, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit over the last few episodes of Hot Takes and Heaters, is maybe the White Sox come out hot early in the season, right? You know, they've got that mentality of a group of guys who have something to prove, whether it's individually or as a team. We've got a handful of guys that have been brought in on 1-year contracts that need to prove it if they want to stay in the game of baseball and get signed again next year. And, you know, you kind of hope that maybe you get some entertaining baseball. And if Garrett Crochet is in the starting rotation early in the season, if he hits that dead arm period after, you know, say we kind of start to tail off again after all that shine and glitz and glamour kind of wear off, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing. And maybe you get him stretched out a little bit to be part of a rotation that's, you know, on a better team in the coming years. Because, you know, let's be honest, he has missed some time, but he's still young. We obviously see the gas is back. But I gotta refer. I watched you and Pat on the Good Guys Talk Back show, and I had to have a nice little laugh with you guys saying, yeah, you know, hey, he came out and he struck out Ohtani and he struck out Mike Trout and he set Mookie Betts down and, you know, he's put guys on the bench that are some of the best hitters in baseball. Maybe he just hangs it up, says I'm done for this season. I'll come back next year. I thought that was hilarious, but you know, on a more serious note, I kind of want to get your opinion on what you expect from him. How far do you think he can go?
Honestly, well, after being a
Sox fan and watching for,
I mean, it depends if they're going to really use him as a starter or if he's going to come out of the bullpen. I mean, like we were just mentioned with Cease. Now it's unfair to compare Cease and Crochet because Cease has been doing it for several years. Cease takes the ball 30 to 32 times a year, you know, and you're hoping for 150 innings. You're hoping for more, but we know that innings is bizarre these days. You know, it's not the same as when we were, you know, younger watching baseball. That has changed how you manage a game from the pitching standpoint. You know, if you can get a starter to go five, people lose their mind. Like, wow, this is great. You know, and, okay, so, I mean, if he's
starting. Yeah, the quality starter is a big deal these days.
If he's starting, though, they're going to have him on a leash no matter what, right? There's got to be a set amount of innings where they're thinking they're going to limit him to. I mean, this has happened to other pitchers before in a White Sox uniform recently. I mean, Kopech had it happen to him a couple seasons ago where they were really controlling how many innings he was going, even though he looked pretty sharp. I think there was an outing against the Yankees where he was like in no hitter territory, maybe after the sixth or seventh. And they were like, no, we're playing for the long game here. You know, like we're being very sensitive to your innings. So they're going to be sensitive to Crochet and his innings. I want to know what that number is. I don't know. I mean, if he's a starter, I would say he goes over 75, 80 innings. I really do.
You kind of have to.
You kind of got to. You know, because then you're looking at what makes 20, 25, 20 starts. I mean, 25 starts, you know, with some of their days off, they might be able to reconfigure the rotation where he might get an extra breather, perhaps. But, you know, I also think back to Carlos Rodon a couple of years ago where he and the pitching staff, but he was carrying this White Sox team, you know, and he was in uncharted territory because of the injuries and everything. I mean, it got to the point where he, like, every inning he pitched was a new milestone, and he just ran out of gas. You know, he just absolutely ran out of gas towards the end of that 2021 season. So what are you pushing Garrett Crochet for this year? That's my other question. Like, what are you going to push him in 2024?
Yeah, well, like Ian says in the chat, you know, Justin Verlander came out, and he had a fantastic season last year after TJ. But he also says that said he's starting the year on the IL. And do we now, granted, again, unfair comparison. You know, you got a guy who's been in the league for, you know, whatever it is, 17 years or however long Justin Verlander's been around. And then, you know, we got Garrett Crochet, who's, you know, got less than 100 innings pitched.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I want them to push him.
They say
he's been stretched out. Well, that's fine, but, you know, let's not stretch him to the limit again, because I got to be honest with you. You know, none of us have really had an opportunity to see a lot of spring training baseball at this point, because unfortunately they're just not televising enough.
Yeah.
But what we do see is the highlights, and the high leg kick and the 100-mile-an-hour heater that has been non-existent since him coming back for his injury that is back now. Fantastic stuff to watch.
And like we mentioned last week, which it's continued again, small sample size. He's not just throwing, he's pitching, you know, he's mixing things up. He's changing eye levels. And this is just another confidence boost after, you know, throwing against the Angels. So in a season that I think you're looking at like a 100-game season, honestly, for the Sox, you're looking from March 28th to what, August 1st, the trade deadline. Cause I firmly believe, just, you know, as you know, my fan mentality, they're going to be sellers at the trade deadline. So then you've got roughly 60 games, August, September, where it's going to be just a mash unit. You know, you're going to see all different, and you should be seeing guys that are really going to be auditioning for next year. You know, what's our future look like? So between March 28th and August 1st, roughly 100 games, like get Crochet, get a sense of what you got from Crochet. You know, I don't think you need to absolutely push him and push him too far and get him out of his comfort zone, because this is going to be the first year he's doing something like this, something he's wanted to do. And I think you got to play for the long game.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I need to be able to feel like there is a goal for the future, because we are future Sox here, you know, for a different type of reason, but I just need to feel like we're not pushing things just to put some kind of product out there that makes you feel like maybe you're going to get an extra 3 or 4 wins in the W column this year. I need to see something that says the White Sox are going to make a push to maybe try to win this division in the next year or two, and then maybe go beyond that in the coming years. Because honestly, if we're just pushing guys to push guys to, you know, try to make fans happy, we're not doing the team or the fans any justice, right? So that's really all I'm looking for.
That's the concern. It's just mentioned in the comments here. Do you trust the organization, Danny? I mean, it's got a different twist to it, but the king is still there. I mean, Jerry is still there. Who's doing some of the day-to-day? You know, things are looking a little bit different.
Damn it, Nick.
So I think it's just the mentality. Like, it's what's the organizational philosophy here? It can't be to put people in jeopardy, like, for beyond this year. Sure, you want to put a product out there that's exciting. You want guys, you want fans to come out. Are you hitting up? You got another lung dart already here?
Go
ahead. I'm not.
No, please continue. You mentioned Jerry being at the, you know.
I'm sorry. Okay, another.
The head of the dragon is still there.
Well, what's the play here? Like, what's the mentality? You know, I think we all know it. If you've been paying attention to this team and following this organization, of course. There's new blood, and, you know, like, we've upgraded defensively and we've got some depth finally, but you don't see a lot of danger, you know, in the new folks that they brought on. Nobody's like this premium free agent where you're like, wow, we add this guy to our lineup. Watch out. You know, you're looking for danger from some of the folks that have been around. You're looking for a different brand of baseball. You know, if they can unify, if they buy into whatever new Kool-Aid Grifols pushing out there and it, you know, it works and it sticks, maybe you're seeing a better brand of baseball. And to Steve Stone's point, you know, in the first game of spring training where he said, I think you might see 10 games better with this team. Nobody's getting in a lather over 71 wins. I'm looking at what kind of baseball, what's the process moving beyond this season, and how are you building for the future? So, you know, whether it's Kopech getting confidence, Crochet feeling confident, and then, like, I don't know, Fetty, who's number 5? Is Flexen going to be in the rotation, Danny?
I think it comes down to how they feel about either Flexen or Soroka. you know.
Yeah.
Unless I've missed something, you know, Mike Soroka is still healthy, correct? As far as we know at this moment.
Flexen, you know, he limited time. Soroka, I think, should be getting some opportunities this week. Kopech's going to go again on Wednesday against the Dodgers, which will be kind of exciting just to see what he's got in his second stint. So, you know, to what Grifol said, you know, things are still fluid in terms of the starting rotation. And those names that Cease mentioned, there wasn't like a fifth name if you're reading into it. But,
right,
you know, I want to go back just, if I could, just a little bit further back here at talking about April and May. And how we've discussed, and I mean, I've heard this from other Sox fans, and this is good, just tavern conversation, so to speak, of what if they have a hot spring? You know, they didn't last year, but what if they just, you know, they're living off of the adrenaline of all of these guys fighting to make the club, and everybody's sleeping on us, and Sheets continues to give his rally speeches or whatever if he's still on the team. What if they catch people off guard? You're going to have to do it, I think, against the division that you feel grateful for being in. You're going to have to do it against the AL Central, because when you play out of the division, you're playing it with some tough opponents here. In April, Sox have got Atlanta, they've got Cincinnati, they've got Tampa, you've got Philadelphia. In May, you've got Tampa again, you've got the Yankees, you've got Toronto, Baltimore, Toronto. Okay, those are your out of division opponents, April, May. Again, if the Sox are cooking, maybe they can stand up to some of those teams. But those teams I mentioned, they've got higher aspirations than 162. They'd like to play into October and beyond. So if you're looking to surprise people early on, you're definitely going to have to, you know, figure out how to do it against outside of division, but you have to beat your division. That is where you're going to have to make hay.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, we've got some early games against Kansas City where, you know, the running joke this offseason has been how everybody has come over from Kansas City, and every free agent has got some sort of tie to Kansas City, or at least most of them. Obviously it's not everybody, but, you know, and all the hires in the personnel and coaching areas are guys that are tied to Chris Getz and Pedro Grifol, you know, from their Kansas City days. But honestly, I think that's a team that's still very beatable for this White Sox ball club. And you've got a handful of games. I believe they play on the road at Kauffman, probably like mid-April-ish, I want to say. I don't have the schedule in front of me.
I mean, first week of April. It's a four-game series in Kansas City.
I mean, if you can take I would like to see them obviously sweep that series just to get a jump out on those guys. But if you can take three out of four, I think that speaks volumes for what this team is kind of looking to do early on in the season.
So here are your first four series, Danny. You open against Detroit, then Atlanta comes into town, then it's Kansas City, Cleveland. So three of the first four series are in division.
Yeah. Yeah. And I see Clutch Hattrick says in the chat that the Royals have a much better roster than us, in his opinion. And I don't disagree. I just think that it's a beatable roster. You know, again, if this White Sox ball club comes out with a chip on their shoulder, like we're kind of hoping that they do, you know, they all know that they've been hot garbage for the last couple of seasons, and they're tired of hearing about it. And maybe there is some fire, and there's, you know, we talked about that addition by subtraction, where they've maybe gotten rid of some of the clubhouse cancers and some of the issues that are around. You know, I don't know how long that luster lasts, but if you can get out there early on and keep that kind of mentality going for as long as you can, maybe you push some of that winning mentality into later May and even early June, and maybe even into mid June, where, yeah, I'm not saying you're going to be at the top of the division, but you're kind of hanging with, you know, maybe the top three.
And I see that happening with pitching. You know, I think pitching beats good hitting. And if our staff, even with a question mark, but if you've got three, maybe four guys that had really good springs, that are healthy, that are feeling good, that like the way their stuff. Now it's going to be different though, because you're going from Arizona to, you know, the Midwest, and we open up 35th and Shields. Probably going to be some cold weather. The ball's going to be doing different stuff for you. You know, it's cold, you know, hitters sometimes don't hit. I know somebody that went to Houston a couple of years ago did not like to hit in cold weather for several months, and then came alive finally. And then finally had his month, August. You're going to have to survive, I think, on pitching, limiting, you know, opposition's offense. I'm questioning where some of this offense is going to come from the Chicago White Sox, especially 7, 8, 9. But one of the big, you know, I don't want to say debates, but something that popped up that caught my attention and a lot of other people's attention was roster configuration already in that number two spot. And Yoan Moncada, I don't know if you saw this, very vocal, talking to Pedro already, saying, I want that number two spot. Now,
God, I hope you have that quote ready for
I have the quote. So let's set this up. So over the last, like, I don't know, 5, 8, 10 years, the way we look at the one and two spot in lineups is different. Not necessarily for the Chicago White Sox, but around the rest of Major League Baseball. You're putting your correct top hitters at one and two, getting them the most amount of at-bats, you know, and you're looking at, you know, Acuna Jr., Mookie Betts, Yelich, Schwarber, Springer, Rutschman. Those are your tops of the lineups throughout baseball last year.
Can't think Mike Trout's even been hitting two for a couple of seasons.
So hitting two, you've got Freddie Friedman, Mike Trout, Aaron Judge, which I think it's going to be different this year. Juan Soto will hit two. Seager, Paul Goldschmidt, Julio Rodriguez saw time hitting in the two spot. And this spring, you know, Otani's been hitting in the two spot. So, okay, that two spot, I think of it as a danger spot, man. You know, the top two spots are danger. Those are feared spots. Now, again, I don't know how many dangerous players right now we have on this White Sox lineup outside of Luis Robert Jr. Would love for Aloy to be that guy. He's sure hitting the ball like it this spring. And, of course, you want to see that from Moncada. He looks to be swinging the bat rather well. Is he a danger guy? You know, is he a guy that is going to, you know, be one of your feared hitters, your big-time hitters? Well, this is what Pedro Grifol said on Moncada hitting potentially in that two spot. First line, he's one of our best bunters. He's one of our best hit and run guys. And everyone knows the ability he has from both sides of the plate. What I did tell him is this: I like consistency in the lineup, even though I'll shake it up this year if I have to. I don't like interrupting the rhythm of the lineup with your main guys. So what does that mean? Which we're all kind of wondering. You got to play. You got to give us games. So he knows it. He wants it. He's got to go take it. I'm not going to hand it to him. There's a lot to unpack there. This is a merit-based situation for Pedro Grifol. He's got to get it in the Cactus League, which you have a limited amount of opportunities. You know, you're kind of getting into your group. So he's got to take it so he can earn it right away and be two, because Pedro doesn't like to be fluctuating lineups and moving things around. So when he finds number two, it sounds like he's going to stick with number two. I don't know if Moncada is going to give you enough in the spring to say he should be your number two, but that's where we're going right now. In terms of bunting and hit and run, Danny, I mean, thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we're only into the part of spring training where we're starting to see a little bit more of your starters get some playing time together, you know, instead of splitting the squads up a little bit more, or we're just barely kind of scratching the surface there. And to be talking about bunting,
it blows my mind. One of our best bunters. Yeah.
Our best bunter. And then we're talking, not only are we talking about bunting, we're talking about Yoan Moncada, who everybody and their brother is hoping he has a breakout year. It's a contract year. It's contract fear for Yoan Moncada. You know, bitter Sox fans, including myself, are some of us are believers that contract years can bring out the best in a player. Why are we talking about bunting in the two hole with Yoan Moncada? We're giving away outs. We're giving away outs. You know, and if you look at the metrics, there has been breakdowns. There's little memes and PDFs all over the place about, you know, run efficiency and what bunting does, you know, with one outs or less than zero outs, one out, two outs, guys on first, guys on second. And we go back to that conversation we had where, you know, we go back to Ozzie Ball, where it's get them on, get them over, get them in, right? Sure, yeah. That mentality works if you have the right guys at the top of the order.
Yep.
I don't know. I haven't seen a true leadoff man really emerge on this White Sox team. And then to say we're going to hope that Miguel Moncada is going to break out, but then we're going to take the bat out of his hands because we want to do what we want to move Benintendi from first to second in the hopes that I'm guessing Luis Robert Jr. is going to be batting third if Moncada is in that two hole or Aloy. We're hoping that, you know, that move over to second base for Benintendi takes us out of the double play situation or that one of these guys hits the ball over the fence. Why are we giving away that out?
That's where that's the scary thing kind of is, like, he says this and he really plays his hand of what possibly the philosophy is for the Chicago White Sox this year. Like, that's the type of baseball they're going to try to orchestrate. I mean, you know, again, with how the trend has been going with the number two spot in lineups, I would have expected a different start to that quote from Pedro Grifol of, you know, he could be a dangerous hitter. He's got power from alleys, from both sides of the plate. You know,
he could have said that.
What's that?
He could have said those things.
He could have said that. And that would have, like, given me a little bit of sense of, okay, Pedro's got it. He understands. But he went with, he's one of our best bunters, is the first line out of his mouth. So, you know, that just brings me a laugh. I would put Luis Robert Jr. in the two spot. You could even make an argument that he could be your leadoff hitter.
Well, you know? As long as you absolutely could. But as long as he's hitting better than he has been so far in spring, which I expect will be
early.
The case.
I really think Luis Robert Jr., at least I hope, you know, and there's that word again, that he, you know, he has a return year. It's very difficult to do. It's difficult to do as a pitcher. We've seen it. When you are in that Cy Young conversation, to go back and repeat it, there's a bullseye on your back, man. It's very difficult to do. Same thing as an offensive performer. You know, that's why you kind of have to, you're just in awe of some of these guys that do it year after year when they, you know, every pitcher knows what they're trying to do. And that hitter knows exactly, like, they know where my weak spots are. They're trying to exploit it. And you are the better person in that battle. Not only just you're getting the best of them, but you're doing it at a high level, like, you know, with the numbers that you put up. So they're going to be out for Luis Robert Jr. You know, they're going to try to exploit those weaknesses. They're going to try to make him chase and become undisciplined and play a different type of game than he wants to play. They absolutely have got all the video, of course, on him, and we'll see how, you know, how the adjustments that Luis Robert Jr. makes. But I'm hoping it's just on par, if not better, from last year. And then with the way Aloy's hitting right now, again, it's early, but maybe it is a health thing. Maybe something has finally clicked. Maybe all of the, you know, the people saying, like, watch out for Aloy Jimenez, watch out for this guy when he came over in the Quintana deal, maybe they were all right. It's just he couldn't stay healthy. I don't know.
Well, I think maybe it's that. And maybe somebody finally, it finally sunk in that you're just not going to be an everyday defender in the field. And you need to embrace the DH role because we all know you can hit the ball a mile. Excuse me. We all know you can hit the ball a country mile. We all know you can scorch it at 119, 120 miles per hour exit velocity to the gaps. And you just need to embrace the fact that you're a DH. So, you know, I don't, and that's a great quote you bring up from the chat there, hoping that Pedro is referring to good situational hitting rather than bunting every time. I was thinking the same thing too. Nick and myself shared the sentiment that it's just a strange way to lead off that conversation.
It's just a weird way to start.
If you wanted
that,
to bring it up later in the conversation after the question had been asked, you know, after you got out the attributes that are, you know, sexier, I guess, when it comes
absolutely.
To
absolutely for a number two
thing.
Hitter. Of course. Right. Now, something that Pedro said in that quote, though, I completely agreed with, is you got to stay on the field, Moncada.
Absolutely.
Like, if you want to be in that spot, I need consistency. Now, it's tough to just sit somebody down and yell at them and say, stay healthy, stay healthy. You need to stay healthy. You know, it's all of the conditioning, all of the prep should have already gone in during the offseason. You know, I don't believe he had the surgery. I think there was some physical therapy, rehab, whatever, for his back. And it sounds like he is completely right. So all of that work should have gone in. And now it's just like maintaining, you know, throughout spring and into the season, all the exercises. If you've ever had a lower back issue or any type of really injury, and you're taking PT and they put you through an absolute sawmill, you know, and trying to get yourself right again. And you got homework to do, you know, you got to do those exercises and in between sessions. And then you graduate. Well, it's like you better still be doing those exercises, or I'm going to see you again, you know, in another month, or when you try to do something and your body's not strong enough. So hopefully he has been putting in all the work that is necessary so he can stay on the field. I think Grifol was right in that.
Yeah. You know, again, hate to beat a dead horse, but health is going to be, you know, just one of those things that's going to really determine whether or not the White Sox eclipse that 70 win total, right? You know, they could easily fall right back to 61 if this team ends up injury prone.
It goes back to what you talked about at the beginning, Danny, the big ifs. And when your strongest link or, you know, is ifs and hopes and maybes, well, all you need is just a couple cards to tumble and the whole thing comes down. You know, it's smoke and mirrors. When you're not built on reliability, when you're not built on consistency, and again, anything can happen at any time. We've seen fluke injuries. But when you play, I guess, the construction, the roster construction, you know, the free agency game, with going after, I don't want to say sure things, but you're going after good bets. You know, this person has a track record. You know, they're at a point in their career for a reason. They're coveted for a reason, you know, because they can do it day in and day out and they've been able to stay healthy. When you look at fringy guys that are trying to vie for their lives when they did it in different leagues and they're trying to capture something in MLB when they were hurt last year, and look, I'm all for it, man. People chasing the dream and it's tough to give up. But when you have that type of roster of like, well, you never know. You usually do know.
Right. Right. I don't even want to get into it again. I mean, I think we've pretty much, it's just, we've said it and I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to beat that horse. There's the what ifs. I'm done.
You know, I said this. I think I said it to Pat, and I've said it to other, you know, Sox fans in my life, friends and family. It's I don't know what, you know, people are going to put up number wise from a pitching standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, and I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I don't have a very comfortable feeling at all going into this season. But what I would love to see is everybody stay healthy. You know, sure, you're going to get banged up here and there. You have your normal baseball injuries, but stay away from stuff that's unfortunately happened to Lucas Giolito and a few other pitchers. Like, I want Crochet to be healthy enough for him to achieve whatever he thinks he can achieve, or to hit any marks that the White Sox want him to hit so we can see him all systems go in 2025. I want Kopech to stay healthy physically and mentally so we could see what we could really get from him. And then obviously we talked about guys like Moncada and Eloy Jimenez. Just stay healthy. I'd love to see what you could do when you're confident and you're healthy. That's just, I don't know, you know, what numbers you might put up, but I just want health for these guys.
Well, and, you know, the crazy thing is all these names that we're throwing around right now are guys that have been part of that, you know, that rebuild contender that everybody talked about that just never really put it together. There is a chance that maybe these guys do. I'm call me a jaded fan because we've had that smoke and mirrors blown at us over and over and over again for so many years. And they tried to sell us this team that was a contender only to get two playoff series with a single win in each one of those series in back-to-back years. And that was the big thing, was like, oh, first time the Sox have gone to the playoffs in back-to-back seasons ever. We were like, oh, yay, great. They look like crap in both of those series. They managed to scrape together one win in both of those series, both years. You know, I mean, but a lot of this core that you're talking about is those same guys. Maybe if those guys put it together, I'm not talking about going to the playoffs. Let's just be very clear about that. But if those guys put it together, maybe if a couple of these pitchers kind of, you know, find a rhythm, maybe we see some decent baseball for longer than we've been projecting here at Future Sox and on Hot Takes and Heaters. You know,
there's a handful of
new guys out there to show me some promise right now, too. And I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute here. But
Ian mentions Nicky Lopez. Scott Merkin had an article, I believe, on the blue collar Nicky Lopez and you know how that fits in with White Sox culture and fandom. And, you know, you're going to have a different up the middle. Like, I'm not blown away by that at all. It's not like, wow. How did we land Lopez and DeJong? Unbelievable. That fearsome tandem. But I don't know. Maybe there's some chemistry there and they can actually play solid up the middle. And that gives you a little bit better, a defensive something behind a pitcher that they're feeling that they can go ahead and do their best job knowing that it's going to be defended. But those names, again, like they shouldn't scare anybody of like, watch out, you know. But if they play solid baseball, they don't beat themselves. You never know. Again, I'm not getting too hung up on, is it going to be 68 wins? Is it going to be 73 right. wins? Because this team's going to look completely different, I think, by August 1st. So then throw all those wins out the window. And what is it really for this year? It's for beyond, in my mind. So it's like, what kind of baseball are they playing? You know, have people bought into Grifol or could he not get this train on the tracks again? I think April and May will be really interesting to me. You know, how they come out of the gate, because we've heard all of this talk. All of the, you know, fast, these acronyms, all this stuff.
And, I love pagerisms.
Okay, you've had another off season to figure out what did you do wrong last year in your first year? How can you do the opposite? You've also changed up. Some guys are out of this clubhouse that I think maybe just didn't go well with you, Pedro Grifol. And you've got guys maybe that are more your speed. Well, how did you operate that? What's the result here, you know? And so I would be, you know, that'll be something to pay close attention to. Now, there are a lot of new guys. I mean, heck, there were 70 guys that came into camp. I think bench utility, super utility, whatever you want to say, those are battles that I don't think have been won, or I don't really see anybody that's emerged. You know, Zach Remillard has had some, you know, some positive moments, hit a couple home runs. Gavin Sheets had two in one game. Pedro Grifol said at the end of the day, it's probably not going to be who had the best stats in the spring. It's going to be who helps us win many different ways off the bench. So, and that's where Hanser Alberto came into play last year, where he won that super utility role. Because they had to look at stats. I mean, he was Mr. Cactus League. You know, he beat out Lurie Garcia. And I think there was a familiarity between Alberto and Grifol from their Kansas City days. He liked all the things that Alberto was able to do. That didn't pan out very well at all for him or the White Sox in the long run. But, do you see an avenue where Mike Moustakas is not having a very good spring at all, but Pedro wants Moustakas on the team because he's comfortable with Moustakas. He knows what type of player he is. They have a relationship. He can play different positions. That's where I see his, you know, in this quote where he's going with something like that.
To be honest with you, that's exactly what I think he was trying to tell us. I think he was trying to let everybody know that Mike Moustakas is going to be on this team when he makes a quote like, it doesn't matter who has the best stats. I need a guy who plays a handful of positions. He's going to help. I don't know if he's going to help you win in many different ways, but he's going to fill many different holes. And he's, you know, he's got those ties. And he's also just been known as a good clubhouse guy, right? You know, just solid.
Which is important. I think that's going to have to be very important for this team.
Look, I know I've been poo-pooing on the whole use of the word culture a lot. But there's reason to believe that there really was some bad culture.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years. You know, we've heard whispers around the, you know, around the team. You know, this guy was, you know, pretty awful teammate. This guy, you know, they had the cliques over here in the back of the locker room. They had the Hispanic players hanging out over there. The white guys were hanging out over here. It was like very cliquish. And, you know, there were some guys that were just complete disruptions, you know, and some of those names, you know, I've heard some things that maybe said there might be some names on that list that would shock you. And I'm not going to throw them out there. They'll make their way out at some point. And I'll leave that, you know, to another time. But
no, I've heard some of that as well. And you know, and I've also heard, Danny, like a lack of respect for Pedro Grifol. There's just guys that just did not want to listen. They weren't interested in buying into what he was selling because of his track record, lack thereof, which is no surprise. You know, I mean, what has he done? He's had a baseball resume, but when you bring somebody in because you think you still have a type of team that can contend, which were the words of the organization when Grifol got brought in, and you bring him in to guide the team. I need to see. And then you retain him without even doing a true investigation.
That's where heater came from. I knew you were talking about where it's knew where you were going. Yeah. So,
I mean, I have a feeling that
you're pushing my buttons, bro.
Yeah. And I hope it's not a running theme all season long, but you know, Merck, it's an early article, but he, you know, beat writer Scott Merkin, you know, started penciling in. And then there's a lot of, I think there's some obvious ones, you know, Maldonado, Stassi, DeYoung, Lopez, of course. I think Dominic Fletcher will be right field. You know, Merck mentioned it, but it made sense when he was brought over. I just think that is what's going to happen in the corner outfield. But for bench utility, you know, Merkin had Kevin Pillar, Danny Mendick, and Mike Moustakas. So
it doesn't shock me.
It doesn't shock me, but you know, again, if you're going to use Pedro Grifol's quote and it's early, they can't be looking at stats because nobody has very good stats right now at all. It's what they can bring to the table. Can you be a defensive replacement for multiple spots? You know, what are you bringing in the type of baseball we want to play? And I think, do I have a relationship with you? Do I know what kind of clubhouse guy you are? He mentioned, Grifol mentioned specifically the type of clubhouse guy Hanser Alberto was. And I think Grifol was out of his element last year. And he was intimidated about the type of players that he was going to be engaging with. And I think he needed to surround himself with guys that he's familiar with, which we all do. You know, if we had an opportunity to go to a new job and we had hiring chances, well, you're going to try to bring in friends that you can work well with, that like you've got some sort of insular thing. And you know, Hanser Alberto just, you know, he didn't have it, and that was that. So I think that's where the Mike Moustakas argument has some legs.
Yeah. Here's the thing, you know, I'm pretty sure it was Ian that brought it up way earlier in the chat about one of the quotes being out there. And, you know, you just kind of touched on it with guys that, oh my God, I just lost my train of thought completely. I apologize. Wow. It's just gone. I'm sorry. Just
it's, you know, it's something that clubhouse culture, identity, chemistry, philosophy, all of these things have been discussed. Things that are indefinable, things that are very difficult to achieve. So you're trying to figure out a brand new way of playing baseball, flip over the roster, bring in, you know, new organizational pieces, and you're also trying to kind of create a new machine type of way of doing things with the Chicago White Sox, where it's plug and chug. This is how we do things. And the garden's going to weed itself eventually. It takes time. It takes a lot of time with a first year GM that should have never been in the situation that he's in. You know, there's a lot. It's a process. It's a big process. So when you watch, when I'm going into this, you know, the rest of spring training and into the season is just, what are they trying to achieve? What type of identity, what type of White Sox baseball are they trying to create that I think will bear fruit beyond, well beyond 2024?
That's a really great question because, you know, a lot of these contracts next year are expiring, right? All these guys that they brought in, it's, you know, especially those guys that weren't part of this team the last couple of years that are supposed to be culture guys, defensive specialists that maybe aren't, you know, wizards with the bat. A lot of those guys are going to be gone. So, you know, are we supposed to be led to believe that our general manager is going to have the handcuffs pulled off him next year and he's going to be able to go out and spend some money? There's going to be some money coming off the books next year. You know, are we supposed to think that this culture change is being, you know, led to motivate these guys that have been part of the core for a while to bring them up to where we hope they would be? And then maybe they get contract extensions or re-signed. You know, I don't know. It's difficult to put your finger on what exactly it is they're going for. We know what they're going for the 2024 season. It's been beat down our throats that they want to become better defensively and help their pitching staff out. But beyond that, I don't really know where any of this is going.
Yeah.
You know, we do have a couple of better free agent classes coming up. Excuse me. But what does that mean for the White Sox? You know, obviously we've hit on this a few times. We even hit on it a couple of times during this show that the White Sox aren't just known for spending a lot of money in free agency. You know, when Andrew Benintendi is your highest paid player in team history, and besides, the other question is, and I heard somebody talk about this on a few other podcasts, like, what does that guy even do? What did he do to deserve that biggest contract in team history? But anywho, you know, it leaves a lot of questions for the future. Hopefully some of what they're trying to kind of beat down our throats this year with a change in mentality for the team. I don't even want to call it culture anymore. Just being ready to perform on a daily basis and going out there and keeping your head in the game and not getting so frustrated and lackadaisical that you are just going through the motions. Maybe some of that carries on into the future. Maybe you've got a good personnel and coaching staff in place, you know, guys that are even working at the lower levels that are going to stay there, you know, that are kind of proving their way through the younger guys that are coming up. And maybe that's where the future of the team lies because, you know, we're not going to sign those big free agents. At least it doesn't seem like that. Unless something shifts sometime over the next year or two, you're not going to see Jerry dole out $300 million contracts. I just don't see that happening. So we're probably going to rely more on our youngsters, our kids coming up through the system. You got to rely on Mike Shirley doing his best to be a talent evaluator and bring these guys along and hope that we have some homegrown talent that we can actually enjoy watching over the next couple of years.
That's exactly what they're banking on. I hope they do splurge though when the time is right and they bring in and they play at the top of the free agency and they bring in an arm or two or, you know, a big bat if they need it. I hope it's a little bit different this time around, but hope. So we still have some more, you know, spring training to go. I'll be out there next week, Danny. So you, I will have to, I'll have to miss out next week. I apologize.
It's all right. I will
be boots on the ground in Arizona.
I don't think I will ever find a replacement that will be you, as good as you. Right. You know, it won't be the prowess of Nick Morawski. But you know, maybe I can talk Ian and sitting in one with me again, or
you might.
You know, we have a handful of guys in the future Sox roster that hasn't made their way onto a show yet in 2024. You know, calendar year, and you know, maybe we'll work something out. But I am gonna miss you. I will be looking forward to seeing some Arizona video from you.
And, yeah, I'm gonna, you know, maybe I'm gonna try to get you have a lot of accessibility, and you know, I'll try to get as much as I can from Tim Hill and some of the other Cactus League stars of tomorrow for our beloved Southsiders. By the next time we talk, you're going to have more innings from guys like Kopech and Cease, and we'll see maybe a fifth starter start to emerge. And hopefully some of those bench battles are materializing, and Aloy continues to hit, and guys just get a little bit more confidence. But yeah, I'll be out there for two games.
And I'm not laughing at you, by the way. I'm paying attention to the chat here. So these guys are clowns. So Tim Hill,
the Tim Hill photo star closer is absolutely great.
You know what? Since you bring up the closer and out of here, I will say that there are a couple of young guys and a couple of guys that they picked up in the off season here that really kind of standing out as maybe having that the makings of a closer.
Well, Jordan Leisure has been looking good.
Guy looks lights out right now.
Yeah, I mean, Nastrini's looked pretty good. You know, again, when you have the opportunity now,
Davey Garcia,
you can't miss. You have to, that the spotlight's on you, and you got to show up. You got to perform when you have those opportunities, because this is the type of club organization year where you could push the envelope a little bit. You could push somebody's hand if you have like nothing else to prove in a lower level. This should be the chance, if you're ready, to do it at the big league level with this team.
Yeah, well, I mean, opportunity abounds, right? You're in a position now where, because of the roster construction that we've been beating up on for so long, this is an opportunity for these young guys. This is an opportunity to show out. So I'm hoping we get that. For sure.
I want to thank everybody that jumped in and the chats. This was great. Keep bringing the conversation, and hopefully, you know, these types of conversations spill out with Sox fans in your life, and these can, you know, because they're never ending. You know, they're cyclical. I love these types of conversations because there's not necessarily a right or wrong. They're hypothetical, and it's just Sox fans just chapping things up about what's happening with our beloved team. So, find this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, futuresox.net. We are all over social media. Danny Miller, it's been a pleasure, buddy.
Oh, always a pleasure with you. Thanks for being my therapist week in and week out.
It is. I feel a lot better. So thanks again, folks, for jumping in. And, you know, next time you hear from me, it might be in Arizona. And, of course, until next time,